Yeah. Some Michael Jackson for you. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. LA2B. I'm Tom McCaffrey. I'm here with Eric B. Please subscribe. Join our Patreon. Buy my book, Born Funny, on Amazon. It was in the top, 50 a few weeks ago. So, and also, if you join our Patreon, you get a free copy of my book and also a copy of my first album, Lou Diamond Phillips. So
nice.
And bonus content. So it's not much. So how you doing? Why Michael Jackson today?
That actually wasn't. That was that group that kind of covered the song. It was SWV, whatever.
Oh, okay.
So they used that as a sample in the song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was just talking about him today with my girlfriend because I don't know how, that Broadway show is out and everyone loves it. It's really acclaimed.
I heard it was not good from a few people.
Oh, really? Because I keep hearing it's really good. But it's like everyone just kind of moved on from the him raping the kids.
Yeah.
I know that's just such an odd. How did that happen? Is like in the cultural zeitgeist?
Well, I think they don't even talk about it in the musical.
No, they can't. There's no way they would just have that. Like, by the way, and then like
you could have a musical number.
A musical number. Do it in the butt.
Yeah. We're raping kids and we're having a good time.
In the butt, Corey Feldman. But I don't know. That's one of the weirdest societal things I've seen. I don't know how it was just like not that long ago that everyone kind of, it was known that he had done that. Everyone kind of accepted. Now it's just over because the show's good.
Yeah. I guess it helps when you're dead. Then people just, they don't think of the horrible stuff for some reason.
It just seems like people forgot about it pretty fast. And like, it was on the Tonys. They did like a musical number. And do you remember the thing? This is how it started. I was talking about today. I saw, remember he bought all the Beatles songs?
Yeah.
And Paul McCartney like hated him after that because in an interview, he's like, I was telling him, it's a good business decision to, buy your, whatever, your masters. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, I'm going to buy your songs.
Yeah.
And then he was like, yeah. And I just, thought like we were good friends. But stuff like that makes me believe more that he molested kids. Because someone who has that mentality who just seems to have no boundaries or moral compass, would just be like, what? I'm just taking my friend's masters from him. Oh, what? This kid's in my bed. He clearly wants it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think that. Well, the thing is, he was never convicted. So his apologists are always going to be like, he was never convicted. So technically he's innocent. So he just had to pay out a lot of money,
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's they always find something around.
But we've discussed this before. Remember he was broke. He was kind of broke for a while. He had to sell his catalog to Sony or loan it to him. Uh-huh. And, I always thought after he settled with the first kid, then everyone came out of the woodwork. But part of the deal was that they had to have to do it silently. Because if 10 kids came out, then everyone would have been like, he's definitely guilty. So I think that's one of the things that him buying llamas and fucking amusement parks didn't help either. But I bet you he was paying out tons of fucking settlements that you've never heard of. Because every parent, after that first kid settled, came out of the woodwork. And they knew it was easy pickings.
I wonder. Right? That's weird. Yeah, you never really heard about that. But it was just annoying when the kids, that documentary wasn't that long ago. But those kids came forward. They're adults now. And they were like, oh, yeah, he raped me all the time. And then, but people would always be like, oh, they just want it. They want the publicity. But it's like, why would you want that publicity? It's just like.
And they were so specific with their things, I'm like, you can't, the way they're talking, it's so specific, the sexual acts and everything.
Right. And just everything about it. He clearly just had no bounds. He just was crazy. He was a crazy person. He didn't live in the real world. I really think he had, a problem and just didn't see anything wrong with it. The villain, they're never the villain in their head. I think He had a compulsion he couldn't control. But anyway, I don't know how I got it because, you played that thing. So
yeah, we'll start off something real fast because I was just watching some of the clips. It aired yesterday on CNN. It was the Mark Twain Kennedy Center Honors, where they, you know, pick a comedian every year. And this was Adam Sandler. And it was pretty fun. I think they're always pretty funny because it's like a kind of a light roast. It's not that mean, but it's really funny.
Yeah.
So he had all his friends.
Chappelle a couple of years ago.
Chappelle, I think Jon Stewart was last year. But, you know, also, you know, Sandler takes care of a lot of his friends. They kept making that, you know, jokes.
Oh,
whatever.
They did. Yeah.
But, you know, he does. And which is really nice. But, you know, his David Spade was there and Rob Schneider and Conan and Chris Rock. And they were all really funny. But Conan's was really, I thought was really funny because he's kind of making fun of him. Well, they're all making fun of him, but. You want to hear a clip?
Yeah, do you have any clip of Conan?
Yeah, I'll just play a minute or two. This is Conan talking about Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler said, "Is he Shania Twain's brother?"
He didn't know, you know, Mark Twain.
Oh. Yeah. I was like, "What?" Oh, yeah.
I get it. This is a big night for Adam. It's the first award he's received where he hasn't been slimed, which is nice. You may ask, who am I to judge? I want to tell you, I've known Adam since very early in his career. I will never forget that moment we met at Saturday Night Live. This is a true story. I was working late in my office on a Tuesday night in 1991, and suddenly Adam appeared in the doorway. His pants were around his ankles. His eyes were crossed. This is true. And a pencil was sticking out of his bottom. Ah, there he is, I exclaimed. Our Twain.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. No, yeah, that
Our Twain.
It is amazing the lasting power he's had.
Yeah.
Like the career that he's kind of just ended up having. It's sort of mind-blowing. He because for years he still does. He just made these movies, and it's funny because there was like kind of a turn. He would make a lot of movies and people were kind of into them. But then I think it was The Water Boy was the first one that was just huge.
Yeah.
And then they kept getting panned every single movie, but it didn't matter because they made so much money. And that's kind of what.
Yeah.
Has
but it's
happened.
Funny. I think like after The Water Boy and The Wedding, what is it? The Wedding Singer.
Singer.
He would always get these low budgets and he would just turn 10 or 20 million into hundreds of millions, you know?
Yeah.
So finally they gave him this big budget. It was that movie Little Nicky. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
And that was like kind of a bomb, you know? And
that's
then after
a bad
that
movie.
Yeah. But it lost money. So after that, they were like, you know what? We'll give you the 20 million to make a movie and you'll just do whatever you can with that. But he's so smart. I mean, he's kind of so ahead of the game. But he knew he saw the handwriting on the wall about movie comedies. And I think when Netflix said
Netflix.
Yeah. And his movies do really well on Netflix. And he doesn't have to worry about box office anymore. He can just give all his friends jobs.
And they paid him a lot. They actually did. They paid him a lot. They like that was when. He was smart. He just was like, fuck the credits, the critics. And also, and then what he would do is he would do that thing where he would every now and then do a serious good movie,
right?
You know, and then they'd be like, "Oh, he's such a good actor," and he's.
But in the case of, I mean, his movies always got bad reviews, even the ones that were really good. But he saw the handwriting on the wall, where it's like these movie comedies are not a thing anymore. He really got ahead of that. He must have saw because you saw right after he did that. It's like there were no big movie comedies anymore.
Do you like, it's funny because like, I feel like his lasting legacy for movies, people always go back to like the first two, you know what I mean? Like Billy Madison is the one that people always reference and Happy Gilmore. Those are the ones everyone's like, oh, Happy Gilmore. And I'm like, that's his second movie.
Yeah.
How many movies do you think he's made? Like 30?
Yeah. They made a joke about that. I think it was Conan saying he's actually making three movies as this is going on right now.
It is awards. Weird. It's almost like he's a porn actor. He's done more movies than Stormy Daniels.
but the thing is, his movies are, that's the thing with comedies. They can be cheap and easy to churn out. Just, you know, have people doing funny things. That's really all you need to do. No CGI, none of this other crap. So it's sad that there's not really a lot of that anymore, which I think would, let's lead us into the next topic here.
Okay.
because talking about low budget movies that now Hollywood's not doing comedies anymore and they're moving into horror movies. And there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about it, how they're just making so many more of them because they all seem to do pretty well and their budgets are pretty low. And they said one of the reasons why their budgets are low, because some of them, obviously they use CGI, but a lot of these under the radar horror movies, they don't use big actors. They get people on their way up. And in the article, they were saying they would prefer, because that's not even what people go to see the movie for. And they would prefer not a famous person, because apparently if it's someone famous, it takes you out of it. You're like, oh, there's Harrison Ford or Brad Pitt in this horror movie, instead of like a no name where you can substitute yourself for that person. Because I'm like, oh, that's a no name. I don't know this person. It's like me, you know?
Yeah, it's like also, you know, and it's weird. It shifts where horror is like in the pop culture zeitgeist and how it's perceived really shifts. And you could see it and for the most part, it's always kind of been looked at as like a lesser art form. You know, right. That's why they have to get unknowns, because like big stars are just kind of like, it's like beneath. The horror is kind of like considered borderline porn, and that was always the thing, that was the template. If you wanted to break into movies and make a lot of money, you do a horror movie, because it's like, doesn't cost them, all you have to do is go somewhere, they're kind of easy to make, and just kill a bunch of teenagers,
right?
And that's why they kept doing it. So
I mean, Johnny Depp was in the first Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah totally. And then
we have a guest coming in soon.
Oh, okay, cool. Wow. All right. Wow. We're being Zoom bombed.
I think your mic's low.
Is it?
Yeah. Can't hear you.
So,
here we go. Now? Okay.
All right. Introduce our guest and we'll get back to the topic we talk about for a second.
All right. I didn't introduce him because I wasn't sure he was going to show up, but here he is. Been on the show a few times before. You've seen him on doing comedy all over. You've seen him on TMZ as his own show. Give it up for Adam Glenn. How are you? Thanks for coming.
Hey, dude, thanks for having me, guys. This is the podcast I've been on the most, probably, but I enjoy it the most, too. I had
really?
To say.
Is that, yeah. Is that true?
No, it is, because I enjoy talking to you guys, but it's like, because you guys ask good questions, and it's just like fun. Like, I enjoy telling stories with you guys, whereas other stuff, it's just, it's work. Yeah. This isn't work. This is, you guys are my friends.
All right, cool. So,
we were just talking about, then we can move into whatever you want to talk about. There was an article the other day in the Wall Street Journal about how Hollywood's leaning into horror movies now. They're making tons of them because they don't cost that much. They don't have to hire big actors. And a lot of them seem to make a lot of money, or they do pretty well.
Are you into horror movies?
I like the older horror movies. Like, I like the 80s and early 90s horror movies. Today's horror movies are just kind of like gory and like thriller-ish. But they're an experience too. Like, I'll watch them during the like Halloween, like in the season. But other than that, I'm not going to watch horror movies. But I get it. I get the fan base. I get the audience.
They're kind of like Girl Scout cookies. Like, there's a season for them. Like Halloween, like time, October. It's like, oh yeah, this is like what I'm supposed to be doing.
But yeah, exactly. But it makes sense though. When you think of a horror movie, you don't see pretty rarely like a big name involved in it. So it does make sense.
Right.
You know, they seem like pretty cheap movies to produce. Maybe the most expensive thing is putting like the music behind it. I mean,
yeah,
or the
CGI. Because in the article they were saying, I said this, they don't even like to use big actors because it takes you out of the movie to see a big star. If it's an unknown, you kind of feel like it's you because it's an unknown. If it's a famous person in a horror movie, you know. And the reason why we also brought this up was because we were just talking about the Kennedy Center Awards with Adam Sandler. I don't know if you watched any of that. But, you know, Hollywood's transitioned away, but they don't make comedies anymore in the movies. And now we're doing just horror movies. So
it's true. It's definitely true. It's funny because what did you think of the Adam Sandler Mark Twain Award event?
I didn't see it, but Eric did.
Yeah, I played a clip of Conan, which was really good.
So apparently, I talked to some people who were in the room. Everyone is happy the way it came out. This year, it aired on CNN, which is usually on PBS. Apparently, that CNN cut out a lot of the political and Trump jokes.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, I'm about to break that story. But Yeah, really? So CNN cut out a lot of the political jokes, especially the Trump stuff. The other thing is,
isn't Sandler like a Republican though?
I mean, I have to. I don't think he's an outspoken or like he speaks about it. I think he's a pro-Israel guy, but I don't think, you know, he walks around ever talking about his political views. And I think he'd stay away from that at anything cost. But there was someone who was part of the dais, part of the performers, that is an outspoken conservative. And CNN was against that person performing at the during the Sandler stuff.
Who was it? Who was it?
Allegedly. How many viewers we get here? No, I'm kidding.
You don't have to say the name.
I won't say the name. I'll tell you guys after. Cause I honestly, I don't know for sure. I'm hearing this, secondhand.
So this person wasn't allowed to perform.
No, this person did perform. Okay. They have a good relationship with Sandler, but however, there was some discussion.
I know who it is, but
against this person. However, you know, the person's relationship to Sandler is pretty big. It was just interesting that I think some people in the room were like, especially for Sandler, like, we don't care if it's left or right. Like, we just want to be funny. So don't cut out any jokes. Like, we're making fun of everyone. Like, we're not trying to skewer this towards your bias. It's like, we don't care necessarily. But yeah, that's the two things I'm hearing about it.
That's I would imagine, you know, Adam Sandler, I don't really know anything about his politics. He definitely doesn't put it out there because he doesn't want to, you know, alienate anyone either way. That's kind of what, you know, what keeps his career. Because we were saying before that, I mean, he's been making movies since what, like 1994? I mean, that's like, I can't name someone else who's been able to consistently just make movies for that long and has never really fallen off. You know what I mean? It's just sort of a, it's sort of a feat in itself, especially comedies.
Well,
because, you know, have you noticed that they don't release comedy movies in theaters anymore?
Comedy film, exactly. So comedy films don't go in theaters anymore. And Sandler was like the one who was like the first guy to say, like, I'm not going to try to put comedies in theaters because he signed the big deal with Netflix.
Right.
How did he know? Do you think
that he was ahead of the game? He knew
savvy he just didn't care because they offered him so much money. He probably was like, fuck it. Like, they're giving me a lot of money to do whatever I want. I'll just fucking do that. Or did he see I feel like he's, you know, he kind of puts out the persona that he's like this kind of goofy, oddball idiot, but he clearly is like very savvy in business. You know, he's a lot of business acumen.
Yeah, he's got his production company Happy Gilmore, which doesn't produce just his movies. They produce a whole ton of content and movies and specials. You wonder if it was him or the team around him saying, like, listen, we're looking at the numbers. People are not going to, and this is pre-pandemic, people are not going to theaters to go see a comedy film. So the best thing to do the only way for a comedy film to really succeed is to really kind of go towards streaming. And, you know, again, we grew up when going to see comedies in theaters. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. I mean, yes, there's sometimes a comedy here or there that kind of goes in theaters, but it just doesn't bring in the revenue. It doesn't bring in the money.
I feel like they sneak comedies into movie theaters now. They're like, there's something else and there's comedy in it. Like, yeah, I saw a movie recently and I was like, I feel like Marvel movies are oddly like the closest you get to like a comedy because they'll have like funny things in it. But it's like you can't just release that as like a comedy. But what can you name the last out and out comedy you saw in the theater or that had like a big buzz around it? Because I remember, like every year this summer, they always had like two or three huge comedies. I was trying to think like Trainwreck was one of the last ones I could think of.
So it's funny. This past summer, they had the movie Bros come out, which was the gay rom-com, and it was from Judd Apatow. The interesting part about it was that movie bombed in theaters and it didn't do well. And I didn't see the movie, so I don't know if it's good or bad. But the one thing I will say is like you hope that, you know, obviously that movie was a gay rom-com. You hope that the gay community came out to support that film, but they didn't. And I think I know he did, and I forget the exact words he said, but the star of it, what's his name? Billy Eichner kind of, you know, talked about, wow, after the movie tanked the first weekend, said, wow, I can't believe there's still so much homophobic fans who won't go support a rom-com. I'm like, listen, that's only a part of it. Like the gay audience could have came out to theaters and supported that movie, but unfortunately they didn't. So people just don't go to theaters to see comedy. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. you know, it's just they're, you know, they go see, you know, big action blockbusters and
that's it or horror. Like I was just going to say that a lot of comedy people started shifting into doing horror, and that's where they got success in movies mm-hmm. was Jordan Peele. Basically, I mean, he was really into horror, like, you know, his whole life. So that wasn't like he pivoted on purpose, but he did. That's where he got his main success. And then I don't know. So this guy, do you remember the Whitest Kids You Know, that sketch crew?
Yeah, sure.
So Zach Cregger was, you know, in the Whitest Kids You Know. And like I knew them back in like the aughts when they were kind of, you know, had their show. And he came out with, he wrote and directed a movie called Barbarian that came out. Did you say that came out last year? And it was really low budget. I mean, it was pretty low budget and it made a lot of money and it got a lot of attention. And now he's like kind of a sought after premier director because of horror, you know, and he was a comedy guy, but it was sort of like, it's weird. Like comedians are moving into horror to kind of get success because they know their comedy movie. I feel like you made like a comedy movie now. It's just kind of like, yeah, all right. Mm-hmm. It's funny. Okay, cool. You know what I mean? It's just a weird. Yeah. Why is it? Why do you think? Do you think it's partly because it's so ubiquitous, like stand up? Like you can just watch a stand up special and it's just people think that's comedy?
Yeah, I think especially with having, I mean, my personal opinion, and let me know if you guys are different. Like if you want to laugh, you don't need to watch a 90-minute movie just to laugh. You know, mm-hmm. you could watch a 7-second video on TikTok and you'll laugh from that. So you get your fix from laughing. I think the comedy that's going to draw people in, you know, is a guy like Sandler. Like, oh, Adam Sandler put out a movie. I'm going to support him. But as far as like a new comedian doing a movie, I can't think of someone who really has that type of appeal that could really draw people to see a movie. Maybe Eric Andre, just depending on the style of the movie, like Bad Prank to me, which, you know, came out during the pandemic, but mm-hmm. like that's a movie I would have went to go to theaters to see because I love that Jackass type of humor. If Eric Andre was doing acting in a film, would I go see it in theaters? Probably not. So I think it goes with the times. The older stars, it's like that audience might go support them in theaters, but
I don't know. I don't think so. Like, well, can you go ahead?
No, it was just funny. It was some comedian. I don't know who it was. He had a funny joke about how, you know, Billy Eichner was upset that straight white guys didn't want to go see a gay rom-com.
Yeah.
And he's like, he goes, it wasn't because it was a gay rom-com. He goes, it was because it was a rom-com, you know?
Sure.
Because straight white guys would probably just go to rom-coms, if you think about it, because their girlfriends will pull them there. But there's no girlfriend to pull you there.
Yeah. And also, I feel like if you're in a gay relationship, you just don't really need to go see rom-com aside of thinking it's like required. It's not like, all right, I better go see this rom-com. They're like, why don't we just stay home and blow each other? Like, you don't need the courtship, you know?
Yeah, because rom-coms are really always the thing where you would go on a date with a girl and like, oh, this will be nice. It'll get her into the mood and stuff like that. Maybe gay guys are like, we don't need to get into the mood, you know?
Right. I just want to I'll just stick your dick through a hole in the wall and I'll blow you. And that's probably the worst thing. I mean, I clearly am very nuanced on gay relationships, but it just seems like you know, ultimately that movie just didn't look very funny and it just didn't really. And it also was kind of a sneak because I don't think Judd Apatow directed it. I think he produced it. And I feel like they were trying to like to trick people and like, you know, they do that. Oh, Judd Apatow. And it's like, didn't he really make it? I mean, he did, but he didn't direct it.
Well, I think one thing with Apatow is like a few years back, he started getting criticized for all his movies were about just white bro dudes. That was the centerpiece of his movies. So then after that, he started producing like Bridesmaids and things like that.
Girls.
He wanted to show that he was, you know, so he's, I think, kind of jumping on that because you remember 10 years ago that was the big knock on him, that all his movies were just about goofy white guys.
Yeah.
What do you think the best Judd Apatow film is? If you're in a
directed opinion, by or anything
produced, he was a part.
I would say anything. I would say I really like Knocked Up a lot. Mm-hmm. I feel like I can still watch that. Superbad. Did he have
produced that? Yeah.
And those were in the same. That was the summer where he took over comedy because it was the 1-2 punch. He had Knocked Up and then Superbad came out like later in the summer. So right. It was like, what the fuck is this?
Like, and then like 40-year-old Virgin. I think that was a little before that.
That was the first one he directed, yeah. Which is good. But I think Knocked Up is better. And Superbad. Superbad is just, it really holds up. It's really good.
Superbad became like a part of comedy history. I don't think Knocked Up and those movies, like, I think Superbad was just flawless from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. It was just a classic. It was so strong that it's like in a whole different level than Knocked Up. But I would say, again, Superbad might be one of his best movies. Another movie which people forget that he was a part of, but I think it was ahead of its time, was a movie called Heavyweights. And it was with Ben Stiller. It's about a fat kid camp. And it was a Disney film. And basically, it was this fat kid went to a fat kid camp, and Ben Stiller came out as the fit personal trainer, new counselor.
Right, yeah.
And
trying to get these kids to lose weight.
It was so good where people still recite the lines, and it's on the Disney Channel network, and they still won't take it off because so many people like signed on network just to have access to that movie because there's just so many good lines. And the crazy part is it was a Disney movie and meant for kids, but it really wasn't meant for kids. Like, it was like, ooh, this is like pushing the limits.
It's sort of, that's sort of found a new life as time has gone on. I've heard people reference that in the last 5 years, and I never, and it was, two or three years before 40-year-old Virgin, right?
Yeah, no, this was more than that. This Heavyweights came out probably between 94, 95, I'm going to guess.
Oh, that old.
Yeah, I'd have to look it up. I would guess off. I'm looking up right now.
But this is what I was going to say, that actually, so this is
a good example. 1995.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. That was, he produced it?
I'm going to tell you right now.
That was even pre Ben Stiller being big, because that was before Something About Mary. And Ben Stiller was kind of around.
So Judd wrote the movie.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So it probably is really funny. But this is a testament to how comedy's really flailed. And I think the pandemic was a big part of it. So King of Staten Island, Pete Davidson, because, you know, he was like the premier kind of new comedy star. And, you know, it's kind of like when Judd Apatow decided to center a movie around you. That was kind of like you being kind of anointed the next big comedy star. So when they were making that was pre-pandemic. That was supposed to be that summer's big comedy release. Like, it was going to be the big movie of the summer for comedy. And then the pandemic happened. They just had to put it streaming. And it really didn't make a splash. And so, like, if Pete Davidson was having a hard time transitioning into like a film, comedy film career, that's like, shows you how rough it is. Cause he was like the guy, you know, yeah. What I mean? He had like everyone behind him, like Apatow. I feel like that was almost the official sort of like, all right, maybe we shouldn't really try and do this anymore. You know what I mean? Cause they're not doing it. Who's the last like big comedian to break into movies? And it used to be like a regular occurrence. Can you think of one? I mean, Amy Schumer, I feel like, was like one of the last big ones.
Yeah. I mean, that breakout type star. I mean, again, a lot of it goes to timing. And I think the Pete Davidson with King of Staten Island, I think that was ultimately a test to see, you know, no one knew if it was going to work or not. They're just like, this is just what it's come to. And we have to put the movie out in a streaming. And then it's weird because watching that movie, I don't know about you guys, it didn't feel like a comedy. Like, maybe there's some lighter moments in it, but it was like,
no, you're
a
right.
Story.
It's not. It was very audible. It was almost like he went the other way of like, we're going to make it more just about life.
Yeah. But I also think that Apatow, especially his later movies, were less and less funny. He wanted to make them like dramedies more. You know, it was the one, This Is 40. That wasn't really.
Yeah, that got a little long.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
This is 40 minutes too long. anyway, I don't know how, but, you know, I grew up in the 80s and that was a big thing. It was always like you would look forward to the big comedy movies and they were the big hits usually of the summer. And it's just, it's weird how it's not a thing anymore. I can't even think of the last funny movie. Actually, I saw that. Did you see the Jonah Hill movie that came out I thought it was great. The one with Eddie Murphy.
I didn't watch it.
I thought it was so funny. And then the next day I looked on the internet, everyone like hated it. I was just like, that was another like kind of like inflection point where I was like, wow, people don't like what are people looking for now?
Well, everyone I think
mad.
No, I think I'm going to answer that one. I think it's why people, because Todd Phillips says that he doesn't want to do comedies anymore because the crowds are too sensitive. So I think that's what happens with comedies now. It's like probably a movie like that where it's a Jewish guy and a black girl. It's going to piss off someone somewhere. Yeah. So you almost can't do these movies anymore without, you know, and then it affects their Rotten Tomatoes rating because some people are offended by, you know, their woke sensibilities by it. So they're rating the movie on their sensibilities, not whether the movie's funny or not.
Well, I'm really into movies. I don't know if you're really into movies, Adam, but like I'm really into them. And I just listened to a podcast about A.O. Scott, who was like the big New York Times movie reviewer. He just like left his job because he just is like, I can't, the state of movies, I just can't take it. It's too much. Well, I mean, I have that AMC pass. You can see 3 movies a week and I haven't seen a movie in like a month and a half because there's nothing. The last movie I saw was Cocaine Bear. And I was, not good. Like, I mean, I not that like that's supposed to be a really good movie, but it sounds kind of like a funny, dumb premise. And it's just really badly made. And it could have been funny because it could have been. I thought it was going to be kind of like Piranha. Remember that movie Piranha that was sort of like campy and dumb and like violent. It was supposed to be kind of like that. But Elizabeth Banks directed. I don't know. I don't think Elizabeth Banks is some great.
Well, that's Adam,
she's the big comedy director.
Adam, what's the last movie you saw in a theater?
I used to be a movie pass and the AMC guy. I had the AMC so I could go see 3 movies a week. And I was an avid movie watcher for years. And then the pandemic happened and I got rid of my AMC, you know, A-list pass to go see it. So I can't remember. The last movie I saw was before the pandemic. But I can only say this talking about like this year, 2023 movies. There's only 2 movies that I kind of want to see in theaters. One is Dungeons and Dragons. I do want to see that in theaters. I'm just kind of curious. I'm not a Dungeons and Dragons guy, but I feel like maybe this might be a way of me trying to understanding the game and kind of getting into something. So I'm excited to see that. And the other one is Indiana Jones. I want to see the next Indiana Jones just because I loved Indiana Jones. But before that, I can't even think of the last time I saw a movie in theaters.
I'm really curious about that Indiana Jones movie too, because the last one was a fucking nightmare.
Last Indiana Jones movie was the only movie I've ever walked out of the theater. It was terrible. So you couldn't end on that note.
Yeah, why was that so bad? It just got too weird.
2 words: Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, it was just bad. It was weird. It was odd. Right from the beginning, it was like rough. It was like, oh man, like. I'm the biggest Indiana Jones guy. I loved Harrison Ford. And then it was just like, you guys are like, this is bad. It left a bad taste in my mouth.
What do you think of the second one? That's sort of
loved it. Temples of Doom?
Yeah. But
amazing,
that was sort
incredible.
Of. But that a lot of people didn't like that one, especially when it came out.
It was
darker.
Yeah,
I can see that because it wasn't much like archaeologist as the first one and third one. It was much more of like an action movie. Yeah. But yet again, like Data, you know, was the star. You know, like he was great in the movie. So it was fun just to see that movie. It was just a different type, but I liked it. I enjoyed it. I think that the thing that Indiana Jones didn't do enough was they didn't do enough films. That could have been like a big James Bond type series and just keep doing it. But I understand why they didn't do as many.
Well, for really 2 reasons, Spielberg and Harrison Ford in the 90s, those guys were, you know, they were making every huge movie, you know, so. They probably just didn't want to go back to the same thing over and over again. Because in the 90s, Harrison Ford was huge, getting every big movie. You know, he started doing the Tom Clancy books, right? Then he was Air Force One. Yeah. Spielberg's making Jurassic Park. And
but it is weird. Schindler's Why would List. They just... I almost feel like they were like, oh, these are like beneath us. Like, I feel like in the 90s, they were like Spielberg especially was like, I really want to be taken seriously as a filmmaker. I want it, which I understand, but it's also like, did they finally get to a point where they were like, you know what? Like, let's just fucking make these movies. I do think it's weird because, I mean, how old is Harrison Ford now?
He's
like
80.
He's like 80 something. Yeah.
That's fucking. Have you ever met him? Have you ever dealt with him?
Yeah. Yeah. He's in your show? He's. You could just tell. Like,
isn't he notoriously mean?
No, he's actually pretty decent. He doesn't talk much, but like he's pretty nice guy. You could tell like he's older, but he still looks good for his age. But you could tell like. years ago, like obviously during his prime, he was like a strong, good looking guy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like he's one of those guys, like, yeah, he's older now, but he, and I didn't know him or never seen him when I was younger, but you could just tell when you were, you could just tell this guy was a stallion.
Can I ask you something? So I probably asked you this before, but like, when you like approach some of these people who are like huge celebrities, a lot of times do they not, are they're not expecting it? How do you like, is that intimidating or what does that feel like? Is it just like, I have no idea how this is going to go? Like,
it's true.
I just don't know that I could do, I like, I've approached someone famous I've seen just to be like, oh, hey, I'm a fan of yours. But I always get kind of, I don't know how they're going to react because you never know. Like, you know, some people are just really weird, you know, like even if you're just like, I'm a big fan, like sometimes they get mad at you. So how do you amp yourself up? Or are you just so used to, do you have a personality? You just don't really overthink it or
it's a great question. I've gotten used to it. And also it's that, that adrenaline that kind of goes into you. What's going to go down? What's it going to be like, you know? And I try to wait my end. It's like jump rope, you know, when to shoot your shot. Like I'm not going to do it as they're taking stuff out of the car. I'm not going to do it as they're talking to some other person. Like you kind of know when it's a good way to make that transition and try to put them on camera, especially I'm not just sorry to like, say I'm a huge fan. I'm like, hey, I'm a huge fan. Let me talk to you on camera. And now boom, we're recording and we're live. And, it's definitely like an adrenaline to it. Like for example, I got Conor McGregor last week or so, and I didn't know how he was going to react. I was like, how is he going to be? Is he going to be cool? Is he not going to be cool? So like, is he going to answer my questions? Is he going to be into it? So that adrenaline is like, it's scary. It's what keeps you on your toes a little bit. So, but also the other point is like, I try to go for people who I generally like, and I say to, you know, the way I describe it to people, like I hit on them, I hit on guys, I hit on girls. You have to charm them like a stand up. You have to, you know, warm them up real quick to make sure like, hey, you're there for like, yes, what I'm doing, I'm just trying to work, I'm trying to eat. But yet again, like, I'm not going to be rude. I'm not going to be a dick. I'm not there to exploit you to a certain extent, you know, like it's so there's like a dance to it. So
is it different now too, because the culture has kind of changed? So it's almost like, that's almost part of their job now. Cause I feel like a lot, someone who's kind of like, oh, look, I don't want to deal with, cause it used to be different. The whole culture where it was like, there was a big separation between, you know, celebrity and just like the public. But now it's like, they almost kind of have to do that now. It's almost part of it. Do you know what I mean?
For sure. I mean, it's part of the business now, but I never try to hide. I want them to see me, you know, I'm not trying, I don't jump out of a bush. Like, hey, there you go. Like, I want you to see it coming. If you see a punch coming, it's a little bit easier to take than, you know, in some ways. And
right.
I hate to respond to, you know, compare it to a punch, but it's like, I want them to see it coming. So they're like, like, you know, I'm not trying to hide. I don't hide from their security, their people. Like, yeah, I'm here to do a job.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's probably the best way to do it. That but, they'd probably be really mad if.
Yeah, it's
just
it's
jumped
a dance.
In their, out of their closet.
Yeah,
it's a dance.
But it makes his crowd work skills really good because. I don't know if I told you that story. Adam was on stage and some comic saw him for the first time and he was doing crowd work. And they're like, oh, he's really good at crowd work, Adam. You know? And I'm like, yeah, yeah, because he's doing crowd work during the day with Oprah.
Yeah.
You think he's just scared of some drunk NYU kid? You know, he's hitting Shaq and Oprah and Bill Clinton. I think he can handle from fucking drunk idiot on fucking McDougal Street, you know?
So that's actually, thank you, Eric. That's the funniest part about it. Majority of the time, I would say about 80% of the time, I don't know I'm going to ask the person, you know, majority of the time, because a lot of times I can't prepare because you never know who I'm going to run into, who's going to come out the door. But then there's other times where it's just like, I don't want to be too prepared. Like I just, you know, just kind of like break them down or just trying to make them unique and interesting and just trying to read the situation. So it's like,
probably,
you know, like
kind of like hitting on like being like hitting on women. Like that's the whole thing is they say like there's like the 3 second rule. You just walk up, you decide to do it and you have to do it. You can't think of something. You can't overthink it. You just whatever, just walk up and come up with something to say, which is a really scary. I mean, did it help? I mean, were you already kind of good at talking to women or did it help? It must have helped your skills with that, right?
I've gotten really like confident at it, you know, like I gotten really confident to talking to people and just being like bold. It's really like, you know, some people, especially my job, you know, the few people that do it, they bring their phones with them. They're reading their phone as they talk to the person. I'm like, that's stupid. Like, and then you throw off all the energy of the conversation. When it's me, it's like, I'm looking them right in the eyes and my camera's on the side of my head. So they don't even sometimes realize they're being recorded. I'm like, that's it. Like, yeah, I got you. Boom. Like, so there's like a dance to it. And,
you should teach a course of like,
paparazzi.
Conversation. I don't know. Like how to just approach people and like, because, you know, it's not just women. It could be anyone, you know what I mean? Like someone at an event.
You guys are, you know, Eric's a great host. You're a great comic, Tom. Like, you guys could do it too if you really wanted to. It's just a matter of getting that courage where you got enough beats in it. Like, okay, like, fuck.
With women especially, like, I've had times where I was like, I have to, like, be more, like, you know, like, engage more with women. Because it's like, a lot of times you do comedy, you kind of get lazy because you kind of rely on, like, just meeting women at comedy shows. But I remember I made a decision. I was like, I have to like engage more. And I was able to do it, but it's fucking scary. I mean, I felt like I really had to like psych myself into doing it. And the thing about it is like when I would do it, it was not as, you know, once you got through the initial, you know, start, you know, initiating contact, it was a lot easier. But the hardest thing is just for me, at least, was just starting, you know what I mean? Like doing the thing. And so, well, you can really psych yourself out.
I really equate with what Adam does, or just being like a host. It's very similar to being a host on a comedy show where, you know, you're kind of coming in cold. You got to get someone to like you immediately, which is the hard part. And you have to be funny, but not weird funny. You know how when you host a comedy show, you have to be a little light and bubbly up top. You can't go all in with fisting and pedophile jokes.
Yeah,
it's basically how... You know, Adam, I feel like he has to approach it like that. He's got to make them like them immediately so they'll talk to you. And you have to act normal and not ask weird questions and be funny, but not weird funny. Am I right about that at all?
No, 100%. Yeah. It's just,
I think it would be really that skill really must, once you've done that, it's probably a lot easier to do a lot of things in general.
Yeah. But boys, I got to run. I got to go try to do an interview right now as we speak.
With who?
Good.
Nah, don't tell us.
I'll tell you guys. It's no one good.
Oprah. But, it's Oprah. No.
No, trust me. I wish it was Oprah, but no one good. But always a pleasure talking to you guys.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on.
All right, thanks for jumping on. Appreciate it.
All right, boys.
We'll talk to you soon. Good luck.
Later. See you.
All right. That was Adam Glenn.
Yeah. Always fun to have him in for a little bit. He's a very busy guy.
There's a lot of people to talk to.
Yeah, but he's got a skill because I've done that job with him and I don't think I could do it because
Have you been there with him?
Yeah, he even let me interview people. I was like a fumbling, fumfering idiot.
Who were some of the people?
I don't remember. I only remember Vivica Fox. She was very nice, you know? But the thing is, what he's really good at is he talks very quickly. You have to be like, boom, 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 boom. So
yeah, he's slick.
In his job that he does, you actually have to be able to converse quickly because you have a very limited amount of time. If he gets their attention, they're like, okay, I'll give you a minute.
Yeah.
You can't go, and start like, you know, pontificating. You just got to go right into it.
Because I've just approached people. I've seen like celebrities on the street and it takes me a lot to actually work up the nerve to do it. Because I just feel, I mean, I do it with weird random celebrities. I saw Casey Shamosko. Do you know, like a guy from the 80s and he was in a lot of movies. And
what Chipotle was he working at?
He was, I did see him at a diner, but he was going in. I think I saw him in that. It was right near where my girlfriend was living in the West Village. He walked by and I was like, and I remember, I think it was cold out. And he was wearing like shorts. And I was like, I think that's Casey Shamosko. And then I followed him into the diner and he was ordering. And then I was like, hey, I'm a really big fan. And he was really cool. He was like, he was like really kind of surprised. And he was kind of like, well, what movies do you? I think he was almost testing me a little bit. and then it got weird. I think I like knew like too much about him almost.
So then he's like, oh, a fan. Oh, no, maybe a stalker, you know?
Well, he was like, oh, man. I'm like, is it weird that I know? He's like, well, you know, you're a big movie guy. And then I told him I was a comedian. And he was like, oh, man, I really respect that, man. That's the hardest thing in the world. I was like, I don't know. I mean, you were like in the star of that movie. You know, that was pretty good. He's like, I didn't do anything. I didn't write it or anything. And And then I actually tried to get him on this podcast, and he was like, I don't really do any of that anymore, but I gave it. But he was like, hey, I might want to go to a show. So I gave my contact info, but he didn't contact me.
Well, it's so funny because it's like, I had a conversation with a doctor the other night after a show, and he said the same thing. Oh, I'm so impressed by what you do. Everyone always says that in any other field. Oh, God, I could never do that. I'm so impressed. And I'm like, you know, if you did it once or twice, you wouldn't even be that impressed, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, this guy was a doctor. I'm like, no, I go, you're better. You're better than me.
Yeah.
You're a doctor. You went to school for what, how many years? And you know,
I don't
things.
Know, though. I mean, I guess some people, it's kind of like, you know, it would be kind of how I look at what Adam does. And I'm like, I could never do that. And they, yeah. maybe they're, that's how they look at this. Like they could, I mean, you know, they do say public speaking is like, people's biggest fear in the world, more than like dying. So
I think it really is true, because I remember when I was working in like a office job and I'd have to give presentations, and it'd be a few people who had to give presentations, and the other people were like, oh, I'm so scared to go in front of the crowd. And like, are you scared? I'm like, I did a show last night where someone threw ketchup at me. Like, yeah. This does not scare me at all. I'm cool with this, you know?
Yeah. I actually once worked in an office and it got out that I did stand up. It was like really early. It was when I lived in LA, really early. And you know, it's really, no, I didn't tell, I think I told one person, then it's like all around the office. And they had these big board meetings with everyone like once a month. And one day they would do this weird thing with the heads of like the CEOs would like offer people $100 for doing something cool in the meeting. Like, oh, good, you know, good job. And they get, and then they offer me just $200 right there to do like 5 minutes. And I just couldn't not, it was just $200 cash. And I just like, I was like, all right. And I just did stand up. Like,
and did they like it or no?
I think I did pretty good. I think I did some jokes that were a little dirty. And I think people were like, why did you, you know, I was like, what? They asked me to do it.
I talked to some comic who's very funny, and he said at his company Christmas party or something, they're like, can you perform for us? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you said no, right? He's like, no, I did it. And I'm like, that's fucking, insane. That's like the whole Christmas party. People look, I mean, that could go a lot of different ways, you know? So hats off to anyone who would do that.
Yeah, it was weird, but I definitely was like, fuck it, I can't. But, you know, it's stuff like that.
How many
like,
people did you perform in front of?
I mean, 100, but wow. It's like in the office, you know? It's like, it was like everyone, like, I think everyone on that floor, at least, it was like a big thing. So I do think a lot of people were like, wow, like kind of, even looking back on it, I was like 27. It was like, you know, that's pretty ballsy. Not many people could do that. You know, yeah. And that's one thing about stand-up and all, it does give you that ability to.
But I think especially now where all these HR rules are in effect and things like that,
right.
I'd be really nervous about that. I've done a few corporate gigs in my life and semi or whatever. And I always have the same joke when I start. I go, who's the HR person? And they go, I'm here. I'm like, I'm going to go to you every once in a while and you tell me if we're good. It's like a running joke, you know? Yeah. It actually works pretty well. So
yeah, that's good.
An off-call joke, I'm like, we good still?
Yeah.
And then people laugh.
And those pay really well, right?
Yeah. I mean, the ones I did paid decently, not as well as some people get paid, but.
Yeah. I remember actually the Christmas party, they hired a comedian and it was Tom Dreesen, do you know who that is?
Oh, yeah. He's OG, a comedy, yeah.
Yeah, and this was like 2001, and I remember he didn't do well. I remember people were like, and a lot of people were like, who is he? I've never heard of this guy. So even like he was having like a rough time.
Oh, I think I was once in a company, and we were at some event, and the stand-up was Daryl Hammond. He was still on SNL.
And see, that's cool.
He crushed it. I mean, he was good. I mean, but you I think can't that's lose why with Bill Clinton people, impressions, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember he was doing a lot of Bill Clinton jokes. Yeah. But it was, I mean, I didn't know who he was. Because he was like a guy who was, he was like did the Tonight Show a lot, right? In like the 80s.
Right, he's one of the guys, the original comedy store guys from back in the day. He was like one of the first guys that blew up. All those guys liked him, Letterman, Carson, all those guys.
Yeah, so... yeah, so that was basically anything else you want to talk about?
No, we could wrap it up. I think this was a very eventful show.
Yeah, it's been we had a guest jump in pretty fast. So wait, I'm just curious. So like you've done that where you've like gone around with him and like, do you wait at a certain spot or you know where they're going to be or something?
He knows where they're going to be. They usually, that's the funny thing about it is like they pretend, I don't know if I'm giving away trade secrets. I don't think it, but either he finds that, sometimes he'll find out. Other times the person's PR person will actually hit him up and say, this is where he's going to be.
And then he
goes to them, even though they called him, and they go, oh my God, like, this is when he was with TMZ. Oh my God, I didn't know TMZ was going to be here. And he's like smiling. I'm like, wait, didn't they call you? He's like, just go with it. You know?
Are they just kind of like walking, or is it weird? I mean, what is it like?
Well, I think he told me the weirdest thing, that this is when he was with TMZ. I don't know how it works now because he has his own business, but he said the weirdest thing was like, sometimes he'd be contacted by people, their PR people, but the celebrity wasn't really that big. So,
I see,
you know, either he would go, or maybe he would film them knowing that they probably wouldn't make the show because they weren't big enough celebrities. They were just trying so hard to get on TMZ it's a big deal to be on that one. So
do you know why he left TMZ? I think I asked him once. I
think that just place in general, it's like you hit 30. They just, you know, it's probably a pay thing, to be honest, you know, because it's like MTV back in the day. It was like, they don't want to overpay people. Everyone wants the job. You know, it's for, you know, kids right out of college, do it a few years.
Well, I think when he was on it, it was kind of like when it was sort of at its peak.
Yeah.
Right. It was sort of like, it was kind of before social media. It was sort of before you could have your direct act. It wasn't as ubiquitous as it is now. Now it's just like I can just fucking, they're, you know, they have their Instagram. They're right. Fucking putting out videos. So.
And he had a good situation only because he wasn't in LA, where you read these stories about how toxic the LA where that guy Harvey was.
Yeah.
And they were just churning through people left and right. And I think he said that he was kind of thankful that he was kind of doing his own thing. No one was on top of him, but you know, all those people, I heard this story about the guy, they had the studios, right? Where they had TMZ, right? And one day Harvey was like, I want the studios in my house. I don't want to commute anymore. Right?
Is Harvey the guy, the main guy who's always like drinking with the straws?
Right. And so he's like, I'm doing it in my house. And then it was like so far away from all the other workers. So they had so he's like, well, if you can't drive 2 hours and you can just quit, you know? So that's the kind of, you know, he's a big Trump guy too, Harvey.
Okay. Yeah.
And he was planting before the 2016 very positive stories about Trump. So.
Oh, I see. Because it was really big in like the like last decade, you know what I mean? It was huge, or even maybe early into the tens or whatever. I don't even know what time we're in anymore.
Just weird with the concept. I mean, you got to give Harvey, I mean, basically it started as a website, but he just figured out like, instead of just watching movies, or you'd rather just watch people talk about celebrities. That was the show. And it worked, you know?
Yeah, that was funny how it was just talking about celebrities. Right. It was like they would become celebrities, the people on the show.
Yeah. A lot of those were like in and out, though. You remember some of them were like really big and then they kind of flamed out. It's almost better to not be that big on that show because it's almost like you're too much in the...
In people's consciousness in that realm.
Because you don't want to just be known for that, I feel like. Being the funny guy in the office cracking jokes on that show, because you're not really even a comedian, you're just someone who thought of a funny joke. So I can guarantee some of them I knew one guy, he was actually really funny though. He was actually a comic, but he was one of the writers on the show. But I think maybe I could guarantee some of the other people who made funny comics, they probably were like, oh, I'm gonna be a comedian now, and you probably didn't go so well, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's it's kind of one of those things that people are like, well, I could just do comedy. That happens, especially now. That's like the big thing, right? We're like,
yeah, Stormy Daniels tried it. Yeah.
Is she still doing it or
no? But she's funny on Twitter though. She's really ripping into it.
She is funny on Twitter. I saw some tweets she wrote.
Yeah. I don't know why they just keep poking her. I mean, like, this is a woman who's seen his penis. Like, fucking, if you're a conservative, just leave her alone, man. She's got all the goods. You know, forget about the hush. Forget about the hush money.
He didn't do it. He said, doesn't he like deny do it? He said, like,
oh yeah,
horse face. He keeps calling her horse face.
Right. Does anyone believe that he didn't do it? Even people who love him.
I think the idiots, I think they really believe, like,
I think some of them like think it's cool that he did it, but she can, like,
I know.
She can do like a police sketch of his penis. Like, she probably, she
I
knows,
think she's hot. Is she not is? Hot? Am I wrong?
I, you know, when she got back in the news, I started going online again, seeing her work, and
Yeah, she's good. No, yeah. I think she's really hot. I don't know what the horse face thing is, such a weird, but I guess he's just, he has to come insult people no matter what. Like, yeah, that's his thing.
Well, she said she did say he had a tiny dick. So almost, I feel like he's an,
I guess that's true. I guess horse face isn't, but she doesn't look like a horse. I mean, I, you know, it's like a hot horse. But yeah, and so we can talk about maybe next time. But that, did you watch his, like, he went to like the cult,
Waco,
the place of the world. That is so fucking, I don't know. It's just kind of like, it's like, if you want to get laid, the easiest way is to go to like a really slutty chick. If you want to like get cult members, you just go to the fucking cult capital of the world, right?
Well, so well, people are equating it to Ronald Reagan when he got. Right after he got the nomination in 1980, he went down. One of his first big speeches was in Philadelphia, Mississippi, which was the location of when they murdered those three civil rights workers in the 60s.
Really?
He made a speech about states' rights. It was like a coded thing. It's like you're saying to everyone, hey, I'm Ronald Reagan. I'm racist. I can't say it, but look, everything I'm doing means that I'm racist. Dog whistle. That's what Trump did with this. It's like, you know, plausible deniability, but I'm saying I'm going to a place where crazy people are, and I'm, you know, this is for the crazies.
And I think he just knew that he wanted like an assurance of like a crowd showing up, and it's like, all right, well, I'll go with like the, you know, the craziest. And it's so funny, whenever they interview the people, the Trump supporters now, they just always look, they're always dressed so crazy. They never interview any of them that just look normal. They always have like swastika tattoos, and they have like they're wearing flags, and they just look, you know, they have Trump written on every, you know, article of clothing. And it's just like, so, you know, it's just, when does it become like, no, they're crazy, because they all just look crazy, you know?
I mean, and conversely, like when that train derailed in that place in East Palestine or whatever, Ohio, Biden didn't go, he sent Buttigieg there. And one of the reasons is it's like 99% Trump country, that area. So I think they made a consent. Like, if he goes down there, he's just going to get fucking booed and ripped apart. And, you know, it's not worth it for him. You know? So,
yeah. Huh. Well, this should be an interesting next year and a half.
Yeah, we'll see.
Or two. Yeah, I don't know.
never leaves the news, this motherfucker. Give him credit.
Yeah, and this whole indictment thing, I mean, it's just do you think that he will be indicted?
I think this one they should, the Georgia thing, you know, with all the vote stuff, the voting and forcing them to look for votes, that to me seems like the better case. And the one that the porn star hush money sounds a little trivial, you know,
people are saying it's imminent, like that it's definitely going to happen,
right? But I still don't think he's going to see the inside of a jail cell to this day.
Oh, no. Of course not. No matter what.
So what do we do? But that one seems more serious, like just the whole, what it is, the Georgia, the vote tampering, whatever he was doing down there. But this seems kind of a little ticky-tacky, even though he did commit some big crimes with this, real crimes. But people don't know that stuff. They just know that.
Do you think they're going to back off now because of like what's been happening and the reaction and the blow? Are they kind of finally realizing this might be a no win? Because it's definitely, they keep saying it's not really like a slam dunk. And if you don't really have the goods, why? I'm thinking they should, because it does seem to just be helping him.
No, I mean, but it helps him in a good way, because it helps him win the primary, which is what you want. You know, if you're a Biden supporter, you want to run against him.
I don't know, really. I just don't want. I don't want to run against him.
You don't want to run against DeSantis. You don't.
I thought he was falling off. Like he's falling off.
Yeah, because Trump's coming back big time. But I think that people vote against Trump. They were, you know, they don't vote for Biden. They vote against Trump. And, you know, unless the country's
a, it seems like a lot of people don't.
What?
Well, I mean, he just gets a, I mean, they, I guess they do, but he also, like, 80 million people voted for him still. So it's like a weird.
No, I'm saying, but Trump never understood that. He's like, I can't believe Biden beat me by all this. I'm like,
right.
They were voting against you, you fucking idiot. It wasn't about Joe Biden. You know, it was fine, but he's, you know, he's a little slow now, whatever.
I love how literally that's their whole theory for, like, that it was rigged, that it's basically like, there is no way anyone would vote for him over me. That's literally their whole theory behind.
And I was thinking about this the other day. This is how stupid they are. Like, what was the first thing that Trump did when he went into office? He tried to get rid of healthcare, which would have affected 30 million people. And then he put all these crazy people on the Supreme Court that overturned abortion, right? And everyone knew it was going to happen. So he just pissed off mostly women and anyone who has health insurance. So I don't understand where he thinks he's getting these votes for. He went out of his way to piss fucking people off.
But I think, like, it didn't, I feel like a lot of those people still voted for him.
Some,
I think that's the problem.
But some, obviously, but still, you can't do things like that where you're actively trying to piss people off and be surprised when everyone hates you.
No, and I get it, but I just feel like it's like, how does he have any votes? That's what I'm always thinking of, is like, the fact that that's what's so mind-boggling about the
whole thing. I think the thing that would, if McCain never did this, the thumbs down, and then if they tried to overturn Obamacare when they had no plan, it was just to go back to the plan where no one has health insurance, that would have fucking destroyed him. He is lucky. John McCain actually saved his ass in the end.
You think so? I don't know, though. I feel like nothing he does really.
No, that would have been bad. That would affect people in red states, people losing their Medicaid and things like that. That would have been bad.
But I think the problem is they're so far into the, that's where the cult is. It's like, it doesn't matter. It's like those cults where they punch them in the face every day and they still, like, stay and they worship.
But that's the 30% of the party. But then there's people who like him. But, you know, if they start seeing stuff like that, they'll be like, what the fuck? So
when do you think it's going to get to a time where enough time has gone past where people are going to finally start reflecting on this time we're living through right now as a, like, where it's going to be kind of, the retrospect or the perspective is going to be like, oh my God, like, I can't believe that happened in that time. Like,
I don't know,
10 years.
They're rewriting all the history books. So maybe they'll never think badly of this.
That's the other thing that's annoying too. That's supposed to be the consolation. Well, history will judge it. You know, like Pence keeps saying that. And it's like, yeah, that's not really, that doesn't make me feel any better that, like,
and not
in
only
50
that, though,
years, people are going to be like, that guy was a jerk.
But they're literally rewriting the history books. You're seeing what they're doing in some of these, like, states. And there was a story about how now they're whitewashing where they're talking about Rosa Parks, but they're not mentioning that she's black.
Really? Where's that?
It was one of those places. They're changing the history books because they think if you say they're black, it's critical race theory. It's bullshit. They just want to make it seem like America was never racist. So 20 years from now, people are going to be like, who's Rosa Parks? She's just some woman who wanted a better seat. She doesn't sound black. Yeah. She sounds like a Karen. You know, it sounds like a Karen, just some white woman, like, complaining about
Karen
her seat.
Parks.
So
she's going to be played by Margot Robbie.
Right. I think you need to include that she's black in there. I think it's important for people. So,
right. Well, That's good to know. But yeah, it's just annoying. Everyone's like, history will judge them. Like, that doesn't make me feel better now.
No.
Ruining the world.
And not only that, you can rewrite history. So history is written by the winners. So,
but like 60 years from that guy was a jerk.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, I had to live. I mean, but do you have that feeling every now and then, like, of like, I had it the other day where, like, cause it's hard when you're in the middle of it to really, you know, reflect on it, but it's like, we're living through this insane time in history that's just kind of snowballed out of control, that I think we're so used to it now. Like, no one's really can see the forest through the trees.
Because,
you know,
everyone,
I mean?
But everyone's looking at different things. You know, everyone's watching their Fox or on different websites. Now, an example of is that Joseph McCarthy, right? He was liked, but then Edward R. Murrow, and they started showing the trial on TV where he was being a weirdo. So basically everyone was watching the same thing and they go, oh, this guy is a fucking weirdo. And everyone turned on him immediately. But if you're watching Fox News, you don't know any of this stuff. So,
yeah, they don't even talk about it. I mean, I guess they're not going to mention the Dominion lawsuit, but, you know, they're interviewing these Trump morons and they're just like, no, I haven't heard of that Dominion thing. I'm like, OK,
but here's the thing. Murdoch is turning on Trump. The Post is railing on him. Fox News yesterday, one of the guys was railing on him about that Waco thing. But the thing is that they're just hoping DeSantis wins, but he's not.
Yeah.
So then what happens with Fox? They're pissing off Trump so much, they're shitting on him. Are they just going to just turn around, just kiss his ass? I guess they would. They don't really care.
Yeah. You think they have any shame? I think, you know, honestly, this whole Trump indictment thing is, you know, is sucking all the air of the media or whatever, everyone's attention. But I think the Dominion Fox lawsuit is the more important one. I think that's going to be the more impactful one in terms, because that's going to go to the heart of like the mouthpiece that's spreading the propaganda and ideology.
Yeah,
I think it's going to start to get a lot of attention when the trial starts. It's soon.
Yeah, not only that, but like the verdict could be like insane. And I read some story. They said that the Fox parent company was like, we're nothing to do with Fox News. We don't have anything to do with. And they're like, no, you're it's you, because it could be in the billions of dollars that they're going to have to. You know,
I think I feel like people are kind. I feel like that's not getting the attention. That I people aren't really focusing on that, and I think it's going to be the one that takes the focus and is going to be the more impactful, important one, more than the Trump indictment. I think that I hope, and I mean, if you start having a trial and like these fucking, you know, Fox pundits are going into court and having to testify, that's going to be huge. Who's not going to watch that?
Yeah, but can they? I don't know. Are they going to be on? Because they took depositions, right? I don't know if they're all going to.
I think they're going to be subpoenaed. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think I think some of them are going to have to. I don't know if they will. I don't know.
Well, the key is you got to have cameras in that courtroom. You got to see Tucker Carlson on, you know, being honest about his.
I don't know
true
if they
feelings.
Will. Well, yeah. Well, we'll see. I don't know. We'll see. I'm probably completely wrong, but it seems like a big like a watershed moment for media and, you know, fake news and all this shit. But right, I don't know. We'll say I'm probably totally wrong. All right, let's wrap this up. We've gone very long. Okay, thanks a lot. And we'll see you next time.
All right, cool.